manos as an opportunity to do research in the tropics. So they have invited me to go to give a lecture, and at the same time, the Panamanian Association for the Advancement of Science, the AAAS of Panama, have invited me to give also a lecture in a separate place. Now, the National Secretary of Science and Technology at the time, Dr. Severino González, is here. I was also at the time in PCAS, the President Clinton's Committee of Advisors on Science and Technology. So he thought was a political courtesy that I have a visit with the President of Panama, President Valladares. So since Hannah was there, we went both to visit President Valladares. After about 2 minutes conversation, he had lost completely had lost interest in me. He was interested in talking to Hannah. We all are.
Right? Oh, sorry.
So, you know, there's a pathetic situation. And it cannot be described in any other way because there are so many misunderstandings in this effort. First, to try to keep evolution out of the schools, and second, trying to introduce creationism, or now the current version, which is intelligent design, which bothers me, because of course it's not science, but it bothers me also because it's very bad religion. Let me first say, why do we have to teach evolution in the schools? Evolution now is the unifying concept of biology. We cannot teach biology without teaching evolution. Now, biology and biotechnologies is one of the most important phases of technological and industrial development in this country. We need to train our kids in science. We need to train them in evolution, because that's the only way if they are going to learn biology and biotechnology and be ready for good jobs and also to understand the world in which we live, including the world of the bird flu and all sorts of other diseases, which are really only understandable in the context of evolution. So why they don't want evolution being taught in the schools, because it seems to contradict the literal interpretation of the Bible, that is the narrative of Genesis. Now, most mainstream theologians and most people who have read the Bible thoughtfully realize that the Bible is not an elementary book of biology or an elementary book of cosmology or of physics, and that it amounts to blasphemy to try to understand the world of physics and biology by reading the Bible. This was not the purpose of the Bible. It's a book about religion, trying to teach religious truths, moral truths. So it's a travesty to interpret the Bible that way. Be that as it may, you know, we have in this country the separation between church and state in the public schools. It's not been taught. Doctrines which are not belong in the field of science. The most recent judicial decision concerning intelligent design creationism was in December 20th. The Federal District Court Judge John Jones in the District of Dover in Pennsylvania, he wrote a 139 pages long decision. By the way, he's an appointee of President Bush, and I have been told, very religious man. He points out that the utter misunderstanding of the proponents of intelligent design and the members of the school board in seeing a contradiction between the teaching of evolution and religious beliefs. As he says in the decision, we have many witnesses here which testify to show evidence. There is no necessary contradiction between religious beliefs and the teachings of evolution. So it is very unfortunate that these people are trying to introduce, as it were, through the back door, the teaching of religion in the schools. And when you introduce that under the concept of intelligent design, then you have to forgive me now for using some strong words. It again, the concept of intelligent design amounts to blasphemy, because organisms are not intelligently designed. We are incompetently and imperfectly designed, which is what natural selection does. Natural selection, in response to the environment, improves the adaptation of organisms to the environment. Those genes that happen to function better in a particular environment are favored by natural selection. They are the ones that get multiplied, and that's how we acquire eyes to see and hands for grasping. But natural selection doesn't start with the preconceived design. It's just a step-by-step movement of adding one gene after another as a result of adaptation to the organism. So natural selection makes do with whatever is already there. It's a sort of a trial and error process. So what happens that as a consequence, organisms are invertedly designed? And to take some very obvious example, the human jaw. You know, we don't have, the jaw is not big enough to fit all our teeth. So we have the wisdom teeth removed. Even after removing the wisdom teeth, we still have the teeth hoof, and we have to go to the orthodontist to make a very good living straightening them. Designed by God? Certainly not the kind of God of the monotheistic Christianity and Islam and Judaism is supposed to be the intelligent being and a benevolent being and an omnipotent being. Yes, an engineer in my university who would have designed a human jaw would be fired the next day. So blaming God for that and you know the birth canal of women. Big enough for the head of the baby, so it barely makes it. As a consequence of her human history, millions and millions of babies have died, and many women, millions of women have died too. Again, that is perfectly understandable as a result of evolution, because evolution, although was facilitating in our human ancestors, was the enlargement of the brain. As the brain got larger, the head got larger. So now there were several problems that had to be fixed. One of them is that the head had to be reduced, you know, step by step, as the brain was getting bigger, the head was getting smaller, and where it was getting smaller was in the jaw. When you compare our head with the jaw of a chimpanzee or a gorilla, they have this protruding jaw, so it has become smaller. The primary selective pressure was on the brain. Secondarily was on the jaw, so the jaw was keeping up, getting smaller. And tertiary was on the teeth. The teeth were getting smaller to fit in the jaw. So that's how evolution happened. We understand very well the process. Also, there was secondary pressure of the birth canal to get bigger. But again, it's trying to catch up with the increase in the size of the head. This is perfectly understandable as an evolutionary process, which, as I said, it gives us imperfect design. It is not understandable as the result of intelligent design. It's not intelligently designed. And attributing these defects to God, as I said in my mind, and I tell this to religious groups sometimes to their dissatisfaction, sometimes not, because many religious groups are not sympathetic to these creationist movements, tell them this amounts to blasphemy. These people with the best of intentions are trying to introduce blasphemous teachings to the schools.
So it's interesting that you use the term blasphemy. I'm sure you've noticed that occasionally he used it. So blasphemy coming out of the mouth of the scientist is sort of an interesting concept. Do you have credentials to talk about blasphemy and non-blasphemy? Who are you anyway?
when I'm talking about blasphemy and not practicing as a scientist, I am speaking as a person who is a scientist and who understands science and is interested in education and educating our children. As you well know, and I think that's what Alan wants me to say, I happen to have an advanced degree in theology as well, so I speak with knowledge of the subject. I have the equivalent of a PhD in theology as well as in genetics.
But I think it's important, and because in many ways you embody the ability for science and religion to live together comfortably and to understand ways in which they can. We certainly in the United States and sadly in many other places around the world now are experiencing this tremendous tension between science and religion, and AAAS has tried to take the sort of middle ground position that says don't pit religion against science. But I can't tell, and maybe you can help us, A, whether it's working when we say that. You know, people who are either fundamentalist evangelicals or what I call evangelical atheists on the other side, think science has disproved God. How? What do we do? You know, are we, as they say, blowing in the wind, or do we have a chance on this issue here in the United States of explaining why science is not in opposition to religion and how they can live comfortably together? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm the evangelicals from the left, or whatever expression you use, they are the ones that I call Darwinian fundamentalists, who try to interpret the whole world in terms of Darwinian principles and deny anything outside Darwinism, and deny the existence of any reality that Darwinism cannot explain. And curiously enough, some of these Darwinian fundamentalists will go as far as denying the human freedom, not really. And, well, so we have to grant these people the right to believe whatever they want. They have no warrant to make those assertions on the basis of science. Science has no statements to make about religious beliefs, about ethical values, or about aesthetic or economic values. Science has its own realm of trying to explain the work of nature as a consequence of natural laws, and that they can be tested by observation and experiment. Now, at the other extreme, then we have these fundamentalist Christians that are terrified of science. They think that if we accept science, that there's a materialistic interpretation of the world. And in a way, this is a case where the two extremes join, as it were. Both of them come to the same conclusion, that science and religion are not compatible. And that's why they are attacking what is the broad middle, which is including Judge Jones in his decision, saying, you know, this is an utterly false premise, that there is a contradiction between science and religion, specifically between evolution and religion. Are we making progress? I believe we are, but it's we have to be frank, we need time. There is a process of these fundamentalist believers that keep changing their tactics as they are usually rejected by the courts. Just to talk about relatively recent times, in 1967, the United States Supreme Court declared that any law that would prohibit the teaching of evolution in the schools was unconstitutional. At that time, what they were trying to do is to prohibit the teaching of evolution. Then, in the late 60s and through the 70s, introduced what was called creation science. So, yes, teach evolution, but teach also Genesis, essentially. And of course, the purpose there, so that if these laws require dedicating equal time to work, knowing very well the biology teaches, we are not going to be willing to teach Genesis as science, so they will not teach evolution either. Well, that went to the Supreme Court eventually, with participation of three colleges, as in Amicus Brief, which was also co-sponsored by the same Amicus Brief by the National Academy of Sciences, and the Supreme Court in 1987, in June, said creation science is not science, it should not be taught in the schools, it's unconstitutional. Then they came with this idea of intelligent design. Now, intelligent design has been rejected in the court so far, in the federal court, but in the Oregon district court. So, may or may not go to the Supreme Court, but they will invent some other tactics. And I must say, there are the majority of the people behind this movement are true believers, people of good will, good intentions, in my judgment, you know, misled. And they are misled by a minority. And I don't think the minority who are misleading them are misled. They are intentionally misleading them. I mean, there are only four or five authors who really have written books about intelligent design that would pass as the philosophical or scientific we have lived with these people, we have dialogue with these people, they understand that they are saying it's wrong. They have exposed, surely they do. They do not meet in public much of the time, but they do. I mean, it's claimed to main names, but they use arguments and say, this is false, or this, and that. And all the kinds of evidence like that. And they keep repeating it, you know, to sell millions of copies of the book. You know, it's a implicating, dubious intentions to these people. But this is, in my mind, the only explanation. In the Chuck Jones, literally, in writing, takes the hands to his head when one of them says, the only biologist who has written about intelligent design, a book called Darwin Black Box, the name is Michael Tarecki, he says that one of the problems that evolution has not explained is the immune system, how we react when we get infections. So the witnesses, the other witnesses, the people inside of evolution, brought him a list of 400 articles published in scientific journals explaining in various components and various parts the evolution of the immune system. Half a dozen books dedicated to the evolution of the immune system and several dozen chapters in various textbooks dedicated to the evolution of the immune system. And the lawyer for telling the case of the parents that have challenged this statute says, what do you respond to it? He says, I'm not persuaded. Michael Bailey was standing standing on the witness stand. I'm not persuaded. And the judge, as I said, takes the hands to his head and says, you have all this evidence and you are not persuaded. So anyway, the point is that I believe he does not want to be persuaded by the evidence, by the knowledge of the not all the cases that have been alluded of cases that cannot be explained by evolution have been explained. And I cannot, the one who's not going to believe it, I cannot believe that Michael Behe, for example, some of the other authors that write about this do not understand these reasons. They are not stupid men. They are intelligent men. They understand the value of this knowledge. They just don't have to take it because they're the end of the books.
You know, there's an old adage that says, just because three scientists believe something doesn't make it science. And there are some scientists who are not susceptible always to science.
Yeah, and basically said that none of these theories of intelligent design and the like have been published in scientific journals or subject to peer review and the like. So you have tens of thousands.
We've gotten too many in science.
No.
I know that I promised the audience that they'd get a chance to ask questions, so I'm going to ask Hannah one more question, and then I'll open it up to the audience.